Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The following is a CA original.
Pouncer, the Palm Squad. Pre- and post-game parties on Beale Street. It's all part of the Memphis Tigers basketball game day experience. This is the Tiger Basketball Podcast.
What's happening, Tiger basketball fans? We are back, finally, for another edition of the Tiger Basketball Podcast. I'm Mark Giannotto, sports columnist over at the Commercial Appeal. I'm joined, as always, by Jason Munns, our Tiger basketball beat writer. Memphis went 19 days between games, and so therefore we went quite even a little bit longer between podcasts. I wish we were coming bearing some better news. Unfortunately, Memphis begins its 2021 schedule with a 58-57 loss to Tulsa, dropping them to 6-5 on the year, 2-2 in league play. And I guess the reason why this Tulsa loss, this second Tulsa loss, felt so, it just felt so disheartening was it seemed to play out almost exactly like the first Tulsa loss. And it just didn't seem like, it's not like the team looked demonstrably worse coming out of the 19-day break between games, but they certainly didn't look better. And I think we were all kind of thinking, well, if this season is going to turn around, hey, look, here's these 19 days where they can work on a bunch of stuff and maybe come out looking like an improved team. And unfortunately, against Tulsa, that just wasn't the case. So, Jason, I guess, what have been your takeaways coming off of this setback to Tulsa? Do you feel a certain sense of inevitability about this season now, about where it's headed? Do you have reasons for encouragement? Did you feel discouraged? How would you describe how you felt coming out of the Tulsa loss earlier this week when Memphis finished off its unexpected break?
Before I do that, I want to sort of touch on something that you just brought up that I hadn't necessarily dove into, and I have a feeling you didn't either. You talked about just how the Tulsa game a couple of days ago felt so similar to the one from December 21st. Looking at the numbers, in the first matchup, Memphis shot 26.3% from three. The other day, they shot 26.7%. From the free throw line, they were 10 for 21 in game one, 9 for 15 in game two, so kind of close. Kind of somewhat similar. Rebounding wise was similar-ish. They had 46 in the first game, then 35 the other day. 10 assists in the first matchup, 9 in the second. Turnovers, they had 20 against Tulsa at FedEx Forum and 21 the other day. It was just a lot of that's and then points, they scored 49 in the first matchup and just 57 in the second. So it was actually very similar, two very similar games. But I don't know. I just think that more than anything, that game in Tulsa solidified the fact that this season is just going to be, I think this team is just by now that this is what they are. They're, you know, looking at the schedule, they've had, they're 6-5, five losses, four of their five losses have come by seven points or fewer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not getting blown out.
They're not getting blown out. So that's a good thing on the one side, but then again, they are not scoring very, very many points. They're not winning these close games. So I just, I can't help but think that this is what this season is going to be. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be up and down. There's going to be games where they go out and they beat a team like Tulane 80-71. But you know, I think they're
capable. They're like, for instance, they play Wichita State on Thursday. They could go out and beat Wichita State. I don't put that past them, but I do put what I suspect is beyond their reach as a team is stringing together like 4 or 5 games in a row where you can beat a team like Wichita State. And I think
that's what I think the second Tulsa game really sort of hammered home was that they're just not this, like last year's team had like a 10 or I think it was a 10 game winning streak or 11 game winning streak before they then turned into this team that just treaded water the rest of the season. I don't think you're right. I think this team doesn't have a 10 game win streak in them. But they are the same team in that they're going to just kind of tread water the rest of the year.
Well, they're ultimately, anytime they take the floor in the AAC, you could make the argument they're as talented or more talented than anyone in the league every time they take the floor. So that gives them a shot in every game. What I think the most frustrating thing about this team, and really just like, you know, the past 2 years of this, you know, under Penny Hardaway, is that it hasn't been aesthetically pleasing. But if they just like if they just kind of weren't so careless with the ball and things like that, if they just hit a couple more shots, they would win these games. They're in position, like you mentioned, to win a lot of these games. But obviously they don't do any of that well. They just don't, those little things evade them. But that's what makes it even more frustrating, is that there is a way, there is an avenue you can see, even though this isn't particularly on offense clicking the way anyone imagined it would when Penny Hardaway was hired. There are avenues for them to be successful playing the style, playing the type of defense they play, but then they just go and throw the ball away and do things like that. Like they haven't, and for whatever reason, it has not been fixed. The problems this team ran into against Tulsa have been problems for months, and you could argue for a year now. They've been problems and they don't get fixed. They haven't been fixed. And so that, I think that's what kind of adds to the, I don't know, sense of kind of, I can understand if some fans are sitting here going, you know what? Maybe I just check out a little bit, because this just doesn't, this isn't going to end in a, it's just very hard to envision an ending to this season that feels satisfying at this point. Right. I guess they could go on a run. They could win a conference tournament, something like that.
Yeah.
But they haven't shown the capability of, you know, at this point to really feel decent about it, to like you got to win out. And even then, I don't know if that's enough to like be an at-large, like the at-large berth is kind of out the window now. NCAA tournament talk is kind of out the window. And so to me, if I'm looking at this like a fan, what you want to watch for, if I'm Memphis, I'm trying to sell, like, this is why you should still be invested in the rest of the year. And there's some other reasons. There's some good news in terms of an addition to the roster that we'll get into in a second. But I would look at it like this, because Penny Hardaway in Memphis with this new contract extension, like, Penny's not going anywhere. Like, he's going to be the coach for the foreseeable future. So it's not about, like, we can talk all we want about, you know, like what Penny should do, whatever. Like, ultimately, though, he's going to have to figure it out. He's going to get a chance to figure it out. And for the program to be successful for the foreseeable future, it feels like it's going to be they're going to have to hope he figures it out. And what I think you should be looking for as they continue to play these games is you're looking for little moments where it feels like Penny is making adjustments for the better. You know, if he's, I guess, you know, taking what's happening and making changes that are, you know, help the team. I don't know how else to describe it. It's probably not going to be a situation where things change right away. We've been waiting for that, and that's just not going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. But maybe over the, as this team struggles, maybe this team's struggles will help crystallize some things that Penny needs to figure out as a coach. And maybe some of these games will show evidence of that. That's how I would look at it.
If I'm a fan, the only thing I want to see is Penny Hardaway addressing and correcting the turnover problem. I mean,
yeah, it's little things. It's like little things. Like, you're not going to change the fact that it appears they don't have any good shooters on this team, really. Like, you're not going to just change that overnight. But they shouldn't be still committing turnovers. Like, and like, not just turnovers, like dumb turnovers. Really careless turnovers.
I believe they had 3 lane violations in the first half against Tulsa the other day. I mean, the way I look at it, they're averaging 15.5 turnovers a game. The other day they had 21. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of like 10, 11, 12, 13. That's a pretty good team as far as averaging turnovers. 10, 11, 12, 13, something like that. If you can get it down to that, you at least give yourself the opportunity for more scoring. They're shooting 42% from the field. So let's say they get 4 more scoring opportunities by just simply shaving down some of those turnovers that they're making. I mean, that could be 4, 5, 6 points, more points per game.
Yeah.
And that's what you're losing by right now. You lost by 1 to Tulsa. There was a 4-point loss in there somewhere, I think. I mean, again, most of their losses this season have come by 7 or fewer points. You correct this turnover problem, and you're winning these close games rather than losing them.
The problem is we said that last year too.
I know. And
they don't have a point guard. They don't have a good point guard. And, like, right. You look up and down the roster, that's the other disheartening thing is, like, these guys are all – none of them look like they're comfortable at all. None of them look like they're playing at a level they expected to play at, let alone what we expected them to play at. Like, down the roster, DJ Jeffries, Landers Nolly,
Musa Cisse,
Boogie Ellis. Like, none of these guys are playing at levels they expected or Memphis expected or the fans expected. Like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And then you have the Tulsa loss, which obviously was disheartening, kind of felt like it set, you know, we'll see. Maybe they can reverse course, but it's getting real, real late to reverse course.
It is.
But then you had the dual news of that night after you lose to Tulsa. News breaks, Artario Morris, who was the 4-star guard who Memphis had committed for the 2022 class, he announces that he has reopened his recruitment. He feels like he committed too early and wants to reevaluate his options. But you counteract that with earlier today, we're recording this on Tuesday, news broke that Jordan Nesbitt, who was a 2021 signee for Memphis, has decided to enroll early at the university. He is now, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Jason, he is now part of the team as of right now.
You're not wrong.
And will be eligible to play these last 15, 16, however many games it ends up being. He could play if he's ready. But I guess give us the breakdown on what Jordan Nesbitt joining the team means and what you expect out of him the rest of this season. He's a top 50, top 75, 6'6" guard / wing.
Yeah, I think he's rated 56th on the 247 Sports composite. So he's a 4-star prospect, mainly a guard. Who can score at all 3 levels on the floor. He's quick. He is high energy, very passionate type player. I talked to him back when he was being recruited, and he described himself as a bucket getter and a dog. That's sort of his reputation, is that he plays a lot of passion and energy. So, for the purposes of what we're talking about, it's like, yes, he is eligible. He will be part of the team. He will participate in practices and team activities and that sort of thing. But, and yes, he is eligible to play. He can play, but it's the way it was described to me is it obviously will be Penny Hardaway's decision as to whether or not he actually does, or if he simply is getting a head start for next, you know, for next season, if they're getting him in the weight program and the strength program, and they are just letting him get acclimated to the system so that when he does, when they ultimately do put him on the floor, he'll be that much further ahead. Now, I have mixed views as to whether or not he's going to play this year. On what, sometimes I think he will, sometimes I think he won't. I think there's pros and cons to both.
Well, it seems to me it's kind of like a free swing in that because of the way the eligibility rules work with COVID, if he comes and doesn't play, he gets a head start on college and gets a head start in the weight room and doesn't lose any eligibility. And if he's ready, you know, you can use him and he doesn't lose any eligibility either.
Yeah.
So might as well have him at your disposal.
Yeah.
And
which is what I think is what's going to happen.
I think knowing Penny, having watched him the last 3 years as a coach, he's going to get a chance to try and do and help the team. And you know what? I don't necessarily think that's the wrong move. Like sometimes when you have situations like this, you worry about how adding a Jordan Nesbitt to the mix would like affect the team's chemistry. Like, because if you're going to play Jordan Nesbitt, it means you're not going to play someone else, presumably.
Yeah, well, this team's
chemistry stinks. Yeah. Like this team's chemistry isn't any good.
Yeah.
So might as well shake things up a little bit. Now, do I think there will be a moment where Jordan Nesbitt does something that is very like helpful to this team, maybe even helps the team win a game? I could see that happening. I just don't think it's going to be something like transformative though for the season, adding him to the roster right now. Right. I do think I could see a scenario where going through these 15, 16 games helps him be a more productive player next year and the year after.
Yeah.
I could see that, but I'm kind of skeptical that this is going to adding Jordan Nesbitt is going to jumpstart this season. If you're looking at it from that perspective, I think you're going to be disappointed. If you're looking at it from, I think there'll probably be some moments where he flashes, but ultimately this is setting him up to be better in the future. I think that's probably the best way to look at this addition to the roster.
Yeah, I mean, you can make so many arguments for and against, and I'll do that. I'll lay out a couple. A positive case scenario: you do play him, and it lights a fire under someone like, oh, I don't know, DJ Jeffries, who has scored 17 points in his last three games. You know, that would be a positive. It lights a fire under DJ, and he gets hot and all that good stuff. The flip side of that is, do you want to play somebody who's fresh out of high school, like weeks out of high school? Do you want to play somebody who's weeks out of high school and potentially stunt their growth? You know, like what if he goes out and it's too big for him, it's too fast for him, and he's not ready, and then he goes into a shell and starts developing bad habits and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I can argue it both ways. But like you said, if we know Penny Hardaway, I tend to believe that he will play this year. I highly doubt it'll be Thursday against Wichita State. But
to me, the only addition that could maybe immediately alter the course of this season is if you could somehow get a point guard in here.
Yeah.
Like that'd be the thing this team needs more than anything.
And that is not Jordan Nesbitt.
No, it doesn't appear that way. He's a playmaker, but he's not a point guard. And they've got I'm gonna be honest, they've got a lot of those. A lot of guys who are playmakers more than point guards.
For sure.
Any concern about Artario Morris decommitting? He has since put out on social media, I guess he was getting hounded by some fans, I guess. I don't know. But, like, he has claimed that this is not because Memphis is struggling. He just feels like he made a decision too quickly. And I'm going to take him at his word, I think, that this is not, like, I personally view this as if later on Memphis is having more recruiting issues after this, then maybe I'll look back and go, man, that was a troubling sign. But just being a one-off that Artario Morris decommitted, I'm not ready to necessarily panic in terms of, like, this is a sign of things to come. I'm not there yet. I'm curious what your view was on that, I guess, reopening of his commitment.
Well, I will. My view is pseudo educated and sort of shaped. So I'll preface this with that. But so the way I see this having played out is that he announced his the reopening of his recruitment without talking to anybody. It's been indicated to me that not even his family knew that he was doing this. And so that seems to me that, you know, somewhere along the way, potentially did another program sort of get in his ear and say, look, you might have, you know, you probably should have not committed so soon. And he listened to them and made this decision before he spoke to anybody about it. The impression that I've been given is that it's all gonna, you know, not that he's necessarily a slam dunk to come back and recommit to Memphis, but that it's the odds are better. The odds are decent that he will be fine, that he and Memphis will end up ultimately being fine.
Gotcha. You know, and we should point out, even though he's from Texas, and Artario Morris, he's like a 6'2" point guard prospect, honestly. Like I think he's more of a scoring guard in high school, but I think there's a chance that the view is much like Boogie Ellis. And I'm not saying it's going to go like Boogie Ellis did, but like the view is like ultimately point, if he's going to be a pro, if he's going to be, you know, make it in basketball, it's as a point guard more than a scorer necessarily. But Artario, even though he's from Texas, he grew up in Memphis and played for Team Penny.
And so, called Memphis has long called Memphis his dream school. So
yeah. So hopefully they can get him back. Real quick, since we haven't discussed it since our last podcast, you broke some news on the IARP James Wiseman front over the last couple weeks. What's the latest there as far as you can tell in terms of that investigation into James Wiseman's eligibility by the NCAA?
Yeah, I in talking to Penny Hardaway last week, I believe it was, we were just talking about different things, and he mentioned that he was glad to have the interview portion of the investigation, excuse me, of the IRP investigation concluded. He was glad to have that over with, said that it wrapped up roughly 30 to 45 days ago, a month and a half, which would put it like kind of, what, right in December, roughly sometime in December, the last interviews took place. And then I followed up with a representative from the NCAA who sort of in non-specific terms gave me some context for what that means, that if indeed all of the interviews have been completed, that means that they're really close to the end of the investigation portion of the process. Now that means, that doesn't mean that there aren't still a number of hurdles to cross before they reach the finish line of this whole thing. But that does mean that, you know, if what Penny says is true, if they are actually done interviewing everybody, which that's no NCAA couldn't say that. Nobody can really say that or not. They could still certainly be interviewing people on the James Wiseman side of things or on the NCAA side of things. But yeah, it at least gives us a little bit, it clears up where things are as far as what stage the process is in. And yeah, that's kind of where they are.
Yeah. Do you feel any differently about where things are headed or feel inconclusive still?
I think it's still inconclusive to a degree, but after the talk that I, you know, in talking to the NCAA representative, Naima Stevenson Starks, who's the vice president of hearing operations for the NCAA, she kind of laid it out that, you know, it's, although this is an unprecedented thing, process, it's highly unlikely, those are her words, highly unlikely that that a case will be accepted and go through the IARP process and a case like get dismissed. Essentially boiling it all down, it's not a question of if the IARP folks are going to find something that Memphis did wrong, find some sort of violation somewhere. It's just a matter of how severe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's it would not have gone to the IARP process if they
if felt there was nothing.
Yeah, nothing to investigate.
They were going to get off totally free.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's really what you know, kind of need to break. I think some people might have been holding out hope that the investigation would reveal that Memphis did nothing wrong. I don't think that's what's going to happen now. I think that the NCAA representative made that pretty clear that that's not in the cards. That's not likely. It's more likely that they're going to find something. It's just a matter of, is it going to be like a ton of severe stuff, or
what sort of punishment does it entail? Is it a slap on the wrist, which I find hard to believe, unfortunately, or is it going to be something much more serious? So that will be interesting. Look, part of the reason why I think we were all looking forward to this season so much is that, you know, we kind of figured this IRP thing is in the distance. We can just enjoy this season. And there was this good team that Penny had. We thought this was the year they were going to end the NCAA tournament drought. We said that's the goal this year. And obviously things have not gone as planned this year. They're 6-5. So we'll wrap things up this way. We'll look ahead here. They play Wichita State at FedEx Forum on Thursday. Fans will be allowed back in a limited number, much like they were for those three non-conference games in December. And then the Tigers on Sunday go to ECU, an improved ECU team this year. Not as bad as they've been recently. What do you make of these two games, Jason? Wichita State's beat Houston. I think they're in first place in the conference right now. You know, what does this matchup look like for the Tigers?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think that if you kind of look at the numbers, I don't think Wichita State necessarily does anything that just jumps out at you. They are ranked 60th in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency, 95th in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency. They don't shoot the ball particularly well from three or two, and it doesn't look like they shoot 70% from the free throw line, but they
I should correct myself, Jason. They lost to Houston. They beat Tulsa and Cincinnati.
Yeah. But they are in first, right? They're tied for first.
Yeah, I think tied.
Yeah. So looks like they block the ball a pretty good amount. They create turnovers. I just think that Isaac Brown, you know, he's got a lot of guys on that team because they had
he's the interim coach for Marshall, correct?
Yeah, for Wichita State, Isaac Brown, a Pascagoula, Mississippi native.
Technically, Houston is in first because they're 6-1 and they have a win over Wichita. Okay. Wichita is in second at 4-1 in conference play.
Here, my take on what Wichita's done this year, you know, they had that mass exodus over the offseason. They had all those guys leave. I think a lot of those guys were guys who were kind of – I mean, yes, there was this stuff going on with Greg Marshall, but I think a lot of those guys were upset that they weren't being featured in Greg Marshall's system. And I think what's left is a bunch of guys who play for each other and play hard and all that stuff. And that's, and I think, you know, by having a pair, obviously Isaac Brown knows what he's doing and has them play in that way. And I think that's probably the biggest reason for their success. But I don't think they are, there's nothing that jumps off the page at you that says, whoa, this guy's really, really talented. Now, Ricky Council, a freshman, for Wichita State is pretty good. So, but I do think they're beatable.
Well, and then you've also got, you know, Al-Tariq Gilbert, the transfer from UConn, has given them a veteran presence at point guard. You've also got Dexter Dennis is a nice player. Tyson Etienne. Yeah. Morris Adouze had a really good game the other day. There's some pieces there. There's some pieces there that, even though they lost a ton of guys, they also return a decent amount who've played some serious minutes over the years. So
yeah,
it's going to be, it would certainly be Memphis's best win of the year if they can beat Wichita State, I think.
And I, you and I talked about this before. I told you, I said, I think that Memphis is capable of doing that, of beating Wichita State on Thursday at home, coming off the tough loss to Tulsa. That's another thing I wanted to point out is, like, you know, we're talking about how they've lost to Tulsa. Tulsa's not quite, you know, not a great team by any stretch. But for whatever reason, that Tulsa team has Memphis's kryptonite. And I'll be interested.
Well, they struggle against the zone because they can't shoot. They don't have any shooters.
Right. So but I'll
be interested. You're right. Tulsa appears to be a bad matchup for this Memphis team.
Yeah. So it'll be good to see what Memphis, after such a long layoff, you know, after playing with this new offense against somebody other than Tulsa, let's see what they can do.
Yeah, no, and then they get, you know, at ECU, it's a hard place to play, playing at ECU. It always seems like Memphis plays close games there, and ECU's 7-4. Right now, I know they split two games with Tulane, so they only have one conference win. They're not like a juggernaut, but they're better than previous ECU teams have been.
Yeah.
They appear to be better, and they have one of the best players in the league in Jaden Gardner. So, two games, if you know, hopefully, you know, two games Memphis is very capable of going 2-0 in these games. They're also very capable of going 0-2.
Yeah.
So we shall see. If you can beat Wichita State, I think you got a decent chance of going 2-0. But that's a big if, given how this team is playing right now. But we'll see. Maybe what's the point of giving up hope, Jason? What else are you gonna do? Like, you could watch the Grizzlies, but they're not on every night. You might as well keep watching this Memphis basketball team. See if ultimately, for the foreseeable future, this program is going to be run by Penny Hardaway. So, you know, these are games that are important for him to try and figure out what is going to be the formula that ultimately works for him. It's very clear whatever formula he's trying right now is not as effective as anyone wanted, as anyone wants. And so how does he tweak it from here on out? That's something I think I'll be fascinated to watch, even though it feels like these games lost some of their importance just because it feels like this Memphis team, it's going to be it seems very, very unlikely at this point that they're going to get it together enough on a consistent basis to do anything but hope they can win the conference tournament when it comes to ending this NCAA tournament drought. But yeah, I still think there's stuff to watch. Basically, what I'm saying is don't just check out. Like, I do think there's these games are important because it's not like Penny Hardaway is coaching out the string. Penny Hardaway is going to be the coach for the next few years. So it's like, it is interesting to watch how he adjusts or if he adjusts in these coming games, starting with Thursday's game against Wichita State.
Yeah. And you add the intrigue of Jordan Nesbitt. Will he play? Will he not? If he does, you know, you're sort of getting a glimpse into the future a little bit. And speaking of playing every night, we failed to mention that If there are no other schedule adjustments in the near future, that Wichita State game is going to be the first of four in 8 days for the Tigers in an 8-day stretch or a 7-day stretch. It's something like that. But
they're on an NBA schedule the next 3 weeks or so.
Yeah,
These games are going to come rapid fire. It's going to feel like, and we're going to look up in 2 or 3 weeks, and I guess there's a scenario where they could reel off a bunch of wins in a row, and there's a scenario where they could reel off a bunch of losses in a row. My gut tells me it's going to be literally in between that. There's going to be some wins and some losses. We're going to look up. They're going to be 20 games into the year, and they're going to be like 12-10. That's the vibe I get so far. Maybe they can change that. But nonetheless, interesting one at FedEx Forum Thursday against Wichita State. We will have tons of coverage of it over at commercialappeal.com, as well as Sunday's game against ECU on the road. Hopefully there won't be any more postponements. These games will start to happen in rapid fire, like we said, and we'll be back next week uninterrupted for another edition of the Tiger Basketball Podcast. Till then, I was Mark. I was joined by Jason. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your week watching Tiger Basketball.
The Tiger Basketball Podcast is a production of the Commercial Appeal.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.